Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this Monday edition, Super Monday. I've labeled it Super Monday, and no one has yet complained about that. Also, the voting started here in the U.S. for those of you around the world who are not aware. It's crazy. It just comes up on you so quick. I guess it's election season. I guess it's officially election season again.
They keep having them, you know?
These elections, I know they're very regular about them, as a matter of fact. We're much more regular with our elections than most countries are.
I know in some countries they will wait years before they call one.
Yeah.
It's like here, nope, every 2 years, congressional and some Senate, every 4 years, congressional and some Senate and presidential. And then every year there's the local stuff.
Yeah. I like those countries where they have the vote of no confidence. I just think that's a great thing. I've lost confidence in you. No. And then you got to have another election.
I remember when you called for the vote of no confidence on Chancellor Valorum, and that worked out really well.
Look, Jimmy, sometimes we make a mistake, okay? That Gungan was very convincing.
Okay.
888-318-7884 is the number here, 888-31-TRUTH if you prefer it that way, and it's open forum for non-Catholics. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, a convert to the Catholic faith himself, the author of many things, including his most recent book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. You can find him online at jimmyakin.com, but you can also find him online at Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Ooh. Yeah.
That was my spooky music.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was some nice woo there.
Yeah. I've been working on
that.
And
in recent years, the term woo has become an established usage in English for strange outre and possibly sketchy stuff.
It used to be you were trying to get a wife if you were wooing.
Wooing, yeah. And now? But that was a verb form. This is a noun form.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see people say this, there's a lot of woo to this idea.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, let me ask you about this. Are you familiar with the modifier squatchy?
Sure.
Oh, you know that one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think it's hilarious. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Squatchy? No, it's like if you go, it's feeling squatchy around here.
Uh-huh. There might be a Bigfoot nearby.
Like there might be a Sasquatch around. That's a real thing. People say that. Well,
yeah,
Jimmy knew it.
If you're out in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if
if
it is getting squatchy in your area, you may want to absquatulate.
Yes. Yeah. Exit stage left even.
And we should explain that for, Top Cat reference. Yeah.
Right. Look, man.
It was patterned after the comedian Dawes Briggs, something like that.
I don't know. Yeah. You're so far ahead of me.
But we should explain absquatulate because many people will not be familiar with that term because it's not a very cromulent term. It's actually a sockdologer. But back in the day.
Why did I start this?
Back in the day, people would, in the 19th century and stuff, they'd make up humorous words just to be funny. And one of them was absquatulate. It comes from an English root and a Latin root. The Latin word is ab, which means from, and squat. And so if you absquatulate, you get up from a squatting position and leave.
Yeah, I've got to absquatulate. I did not know the origins of the term.
Uh-huh.
I just knew
that's
what it. Yeah. I am so impressed that you recognize Top Cat.
I loved all of those cartoons when I was a kid. I still love cartoons.
888-318-7884, the number. If you're not a Catholic and you got a question about anything having to do with the Catholic faith, you are welcome. Let's start with Holly in Vacaville, California. Sometimes called Vacaville as well. Whatever. It's a cow town. You are up next, Holly. Your question for Jimmy.
It is a cow town.
Well, that's what Vacaville means, is cow town.
It is. There's an interesting history to that. Thank you so much for taking my call. And my question is this. I was baptized as an infant in the Lutheran church. My parents were infants.
Mm-hmm.
I had wrestled with becoming Catholic for well over 10 years, and I'm now in the RCIA program. And as we get closer to the Easter Vigil, I don't know why, but I'm becoming more and more anxious about, what happens to me if I die before I actually get to the confirmation and my first communion? Because I understand people outside the church can be saved, be saved, but, I don't know if I can have an assurance of anything, but it does make me wonder, because I am, older, what happens if you die before you make it through RCIA and you get to your first confirmation? That's my question.
Okay. Well, if at any time you get into a situation where you think you may be in danger of death, you can approach a priest and explain the situation and say, I think I need to come into the church now because I may not make it. And that they can receive you under emergency circumstances. In fact, I was received into the church under emergency circumstances because my wife at the time was dying, and I was actually received, and that affected the timing of my reception into the church. Because I very much wanted to enter the church before she passed, and so I was received in her hospital room using the emergency shortened form of the rite. So it can be done very expeditiously if need be. And so if you were, God forbid, to get into a situation where it looked like you were going to pass before you were otherwise scheduled to come in, that schedule could be moved up. So I just want you to know that. Hopefully, and based on the way you're sounding over the phone, it sounds like you're in quite good health, and this situation hopefully is not really an imminent one. But in terms of the principles involved, well, now since you've already been baptized, you're not a catechumen. You're a candidate for reception into the church. A catechumen is a person who is not yet baptized, but who is intending to be baptized. And that intent to enter the church is often referred to using the term baptism of desire. So like a person who's merely intending to come into the church clearly desires baptism. And so the grace of baptism can be given to them through that desire for baptism or baptism of desire. And the church regards that as sufficient for salvation. If a person's intending to be baptized, they want to be saved, they want to come to Jesus the way he wants them to come to him, then he'll share his grace with them even though they're prevented by circumstances, namely death, from actually being baptized. And the church even, according to Lumen Gentium, that's one of the documents of the Second Vatican Council, the church acknowledges, even though they're not full Christians yet, they're not full Catholics yet, acknowledges catechumens as her own spiritually, and will even give ecclesiastical burial to catechumens who've died. Well, since you're already baptized, you're in an even more advantaged position than a catechumen, because you already have the grace of baptism, and that's going to help you out in addition. And so if, God forbid, you were to die before being received, it's not something that would cost you salvation. Now, like anybody else, what would cost salvation is unrepented mortal sin. But that applies to everybody, whether you're baptized or confirmed or have received the Eucharist or not. If you're concerned about mortal sin, then there are a couple things you could do. The first one would be make an act of what's called perfect contrition. That's where you say, God, I'm sorry. I love you because you're infinitely good, and I want to do your will, and I reject those sins I did, and I, with your help, I'll master this. And if you have love for God because he's infinite, this is not a feeling, it's a choice, really. But if you choose to turn away from sin because of God's infinite goodness, then that of itself reconciles you with him even before you can go to confession. But also the good news is because you're already baptized, you could go to confession. And in fact, it's normal, it's standard for adult converts to the Catholic faith to go to confession before they receive confirmation and the Eucharist. I did it in a little anteroom in the hospital just before I was received into the church. So if you're concerned about, I've committed some mortal sins, and I want to get reconciled with him, you could actually approach a priest and say, look, I'm in RCIA, and it would really help me out to go to confession. Could we arrange that now? And you may want to go again before you're officially received, but in this kind of situation, you could request, an individual priest might or might not say yes, but you could request under canon law receiving confession at this point.
Okay, Holly.
That's actually very helpful, and I appreciate the information about confession, because we were told we had to wait until, I guess, Holy Week to do confessions.
Yeah,
so,
that's not a rule of the that's not a rule of canon law. That may be something that the parish has set up. But you could always go to you could either ask at your parish or at a different parish. But someone coming from your background, canon law provides that they can receive in special circumstances. And if you're worried about your health and your spiritual status, you know, that would qualify.
Holly, thank you. Appreciate that. Please call anytime. It's exciting that you're making your way into full communion with the church. And if we can be helpful, we'd like to be helpful. Right now, we've got a brand new free ebook. There's usually a new one about the first of every month. And this is the first time we've been here on air live this month. And this month's free ebook is God's Love for You. Visit shop.catholic.com today and look for the banner at the top of the page to download your free copy of this free ebook, God's Love for You.
Your questions, Catholic answers, live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The power of prayer simply means that words have an effect. For example, when a couple says, "I do," it literally changes two people to becoming one in marriage. When you say, "I love you," it changes us and it gives us value. The power of prayer is in the words and in the sentiment, but it's also in the fact that God, who is omnipotent, all-powerful, answers our prayers.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Facebook question, is there Mystic Monk beer? I think that's related to the ad for Mystic Monk coffee, and I don't believe that there is Mystic Monk beer. But and I think that,
I'm aware of.
It might have come from a Catholic, too. I think I might have just broken the rules for today. Because the rules are, it's open forum for non-Catholics this hour. If you're not a Catholic and you'd like to know something about the Catholic Church, or maybe there's something that you already know about the Catholic Church that you would like explained or justified, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884.
So let's talk about people who are not Catholics, to give them an idea of who could call.
Okay.
So we just had a call from a lady who's in RCIA and is intending to become Catholic.
Right.
But because she's not yet, she gets to call.
Right.
On the other hand, she could be another kind of Protestant who's not planning on becoming Catholic, but who still has a question.
And
it doesn't even have to be a question about the Catholic faith. It could be a question about anything. You know, this isn't Catholic Q&A for, you know, Catholic-only questions by non-Catholics. It could be about the Bible. It could be about science. It could be about philosophy. It could be about, you know, whatever you want. Or it doesn't have to be a Protestant. It could be an Eastern Orthodox or an Assyrian or a Copt or any other kind of Christian. It could be someone who's from one of those movements like Mormonism or Jehovah's Witnesses or it could be someone who doesn't claim to be Christian at all. It could be a Jewish person or a Muslim person or a Hindu person or a Shinto person or a Buddhist person. It could be someone who's an atheist. It could be an agnostic. It could be anybody, as long as they're not a Catholic. And it doesn't even have to be a question about the Catholic faith. It can just be a question.
888-318-7884 is that number. Moral questions. People call with moral questions as well,
sure.
Sometimes. Sure. Jay in Illinois, listening on 88.1 FM. You are next. Your question for Jimmy Akin. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay. Hi. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you. You have a question for Jimmy Akin?
Yes, I do. The question is this. I was listening to your broadcast about the ship and then the rafts going to the side, like water flows from different denominations. Well, the question I have is, from a Catholic perspective, how do you explain the Inquisition? If the Catholic Church was founded by Christ, then how does the Catholic explain all the deaths of those people who are Protestants or protesting the Catholic Church? I'm just wondering what you understand from the Catholic eye what they view the Inquisition was and why they did what they did.
Okay, Jay. The reference to the boat was something that Steve Ray said last half hour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't hear that. I was giving a talk to a group of pro-life students. So we should be clear historically. We want to deal with the facts of history as they were, pleasant or not. There have been a number of different inquisitions over the course of Christian history. They're not. There's not just one inquisition. And the inquisition that many people cite, although, like I said, it's not the only one, is the Spanish Inquisition. And that one did not deal really with Protestants. What had happened was you had Spain had been under Muslim control for some time. And then eventually the Spaniards were able to reclaim their territory and expel Muslim forces. And also there had been Jewish people who had been mixed in among Muslim society. And some of the Jewish people said, we're not Muslims, and we even are willing to become Christians in order to stay here. Because the Spaniards, after having had a religiously divided society, really did not want that.
Mm-hmm.
They were rebuilding their national identity and they wanted religious solidarity. And so some Jewish people decided to become Christians and stay in Spain. But some of them weren't really sincere. This is a group of people who are known as conversos, which means the converted. But they really were actually continuing to practice Judaism in secret. So it wasn't a sincere conversion. And that's really what the original Spanish Inquisition was set up to deal with. People who were outwardly pretending to be Christian, but were secretly practicing another religion and then propagating that religion in secret. So like they would teach their children, even though we're acting this way.
Yeah,
we're not. And so that's what the purpose of the inquiry in Inquisition was let's inquire and find out, is this person sincere or not? Now, if a judgment was made, and it was also applied to other people who, besides Jews, who were Christians that were deviating from major Christian teachings, not Protestants, but because they weren't around yet, but others who would like deny key tenets of the Christian faith and commit heresy. And in the Middle Ages, this was viewed as a really bad thing. Thomas Aquinas, for example, who lived during the 1200s, his analogy went as follows. If somebody is a murderer, we don't hesitate to apply the death penalty to them because they're killing other people and they're depriving them of life when they kill them. You stick a sword in somebody, he's dead. And they're depriving the person of this great gift of life. And in order to protect the community from a murderer, we need to eliminate the murderer. And so we don't hesitate to apply the death penalty. And consequently, if we do that for someone who merely kills the body with a sword, let's say, how much more do we need to do that who kills a soul with heresy and deprives the person of eternal life, an even greater gift than physical life? And so that was the rationale. It was basically an attempt to protect people's eternal souls by eliminating people who were going to jeopardize the salvation of other people. So it was politically destabilizing and also spiritually dangerous in these people's view. And that's why they were willing to take extreme measures to deal with this. Having said that, it wasn't the church itself that did the executions. What would happen is if the Inquisition determined that somebody was insincerely pretending to be Christian, or a heretic or whatever, they then turned them over to the civil authorities, and the civil authorities would do it. But the civil authorities were doing that with the church's blessing. The church knew what was going on.
Yep.
And the reason that they were doing it is because they viewed this as extremely dangerous. And something that would cost people salvation. So you ask, what were people thinking? That's what people were thinking. Now, what about today? Today, we're hundreds of years later. From a Catholic perspective, the church has been guided by the Holy Spirit to further doctrinal development. And one thing you could point out to Aquinas is, well, in the case of a murderer, the victim is not willing. And it's not the victim's own action that kills himself. Even if he were willing, it's the fact you're sticking a sword in him that's what's killing him. In the case of a heresy, the person chooses to become a heretic. And that makes a difference in who's responsible. And that could make a difference in whether or not the death penalty is warranted. Also, of course, today there's questions about the death penalty. But today,
it's a separate question.
It's a separate question.
Yeah.
But that's what people were thinking. In terms of how does that square with this being Jesus's church, Jesus never promised his church wasn't going to have sinners in it. In fact, he promised it would. He promised there would be wolves in sheep's clothing. He promised his own disciples would abandon him and that Peter would deny him. So you have the very first pope, Peter, denying Jesus and then coming back to the faith. And if that was the case right then when Jesus founded his church, you can expect similar things to happen in later church history. And they did. And so that, I hope, contextualizes this some for you, Jay. That's what people were thinking. That's how people might look at it today. And that's also how it's consistent with the idea that Jesus has founded his church without promising it wasn't going to have leaders who made mistakes. In fact, he promised it would have leaders who did make mistakes, and he was right about that. But he still instituted the church as an instrument to provide for men's salvation.
Jay, thank you for the call. It's an open forum for non-Catholics today. If you are a non-Catholic and you'd like to ask a Catholic, 888-318-7884.
Actually, I wanted to add a little bit to that. When we do finally get down to the point in church history that we have Protestants, the deaths really weren't typically related to an Inquisition. They were typically related to the wars of religion.
Oh, yeah.
And those were two-sided.
Yeah.
In fact, Protestantism initially spread by imposing Protestantism using the local princes on the local populations, whether they wanted it or not. And there also were, even though you don't hear about it as much because we live in a Protestant country, there were Protestants who killed Catholics, and there were the equivalent of Protestant Inquisitions that put people to death too. I'm not saying that to run Protestants down. I'm just saying we shouldn't be one-sided in our look at history. And because you go back far enough, everybody's ancestors have blood on their hands.
Yep.
Whether you're Christian or whether you're Catholic or Protestant or Jewish or Muslim or atheist, your ancestors killed some people they shouldn't have because Earth is a barbaric place historically.
Thank you again for the call. Let's go to Marcus in Boise, Idaho, listening on Salt and Light Radio. Marcus, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, so I just want to apologize at first because I'm not as eloquent as you guys. It's awesome listening to you guys, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But I just, yeah, absolutely. So I just had a quick question. Kind of the problem I've had, the biggest problem I've had with believing in God is pretty much the problem of evil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very empathetic guy, and it's very difficult for me to come to terms with all of the suffering in the world and how that kind of doesn't contradict an all good and all loving God. And so my whenever I ask this question, the normal response that I get is that, you know, it's God gave us free will and humans decided to cause this suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem I kind of have with that answer is just that I imagine when God's creating people, he has their entire future. He knows it's their entire future.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's creating them, he has to be creating them with that future in mind. So he has to be creating that future as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I'm familiar with this question. Uh-huh. So we're coming up on a break, and it's a little complex to answer in the very brief amount of time we have before the break. So I'll do a little bit now, but really we're going to need to save the bulk of the answer till after the break. So just to frame the objection, it's if God knows that somebody is going to abuse their free will, why would he go ahead and create them anyway? And there are several ways of responding to this. The first one is, on the Catholic Church's understanding, God always has a way to bring about an equal or greater good out of every abuse of free will, out of every single evil, physical and moral. And so, from one perspective, God allows people to creates people, even knowing they're going to misuse their free will. He allows that because he knows he's going to bring good out of it. It'll be an equal or even greater good. And so he's planning on a better situation always than what would have happened if he did not create this person. It will always be better because he created the person, even though they're going to misuse their free will. But that also leads us to the question we'll deal with after the break, which is it always better for that person?
All right, hang on. We'll come back with Jimmy's answer to that. Marcus, it's open forum for non-Catholics. 888-318-7884. Non-Catholics, more than welcome.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Dr. David Anders here. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Why confess my sins to a priest?
Find out more tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on Call to Communion.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Marcus is on the line with Jimmy. It's open forum for non-Catholics, so if you're not a Catholic, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. And we were talking a bit about the problem of evil when we went to the break.
I can recap.
Yeah. I mean, so, I had to say I was disappointed. You know, you had 45 seconds to solve the problem of evil. And
no, don't think of it that way. Now I get to give you the bonus information. I get to give even more.
All right. Okay, Jimmy.
Okay. So on the church's understanding, why would God create someone knowing they're going to misuse their free will? Because on the church's understanding, he always has a way to bring an equal or greater good out of every evil, including abuses of free will. And he wouldn't permit the evil to exist otherwise. And so on the Catholic perspective, the world will be a better place for God creating someone, even knowing that that person is going to do some stuff they shouldn't, because God will bring an even greater good out of that. But just because the world is a better place doesn't mean that it's better for that person. You know, what if the person is going to die in unrepented mortal sin and go to hell? Why would God create a person in that situation? Well, there's, you know, if he knew someone's going to die in unrepentant mortal sin, why would he create that person? Because it means they're going to go to hell. There is more than one way of answering this question. You'll notice I said, if God knows that. And there's a question about whether God knows that, because it's kind of like the problem of omnipotence. You know, omnipotence is the ability to do anything that doesn't involve a logical contradiction. So God could make a stone of any size whatsoever, because there's no such thing as a stone too heavy for an omnipotent being to lift. So, you know, any size stone God could create. But because the phrase, a stone too heavy to lift with infinite power, is nonsensical. It would mean more than infinite, and by definition, there is nothing more than infinite.
Right.
So it's like a square circle or a four-sided triangle. That's just verbal word salad. It doesn't correspond to any possible conceivable entity. And in the same way, omniscience is the ability to know anything that can be known, but it doesn't mean the ability to know word salad, like what is the shape of a four-sided triangle.
Yep.
That's just word salad. It is inconceivable to have a four-sided triangle because the terms involved are contradictory. And so God does not know the shape of a four-sided triangle.
And you know the meaning of the word inconceivable.
Yes. It's inconceivable. So the question is, well, how does God's knowledge work when it comes to the question of what people are going to do? Well, theologians historically have all agreed, Orthodox Christian theologians have all agreed that God is omniscient in the sense, in several senses. Number one, he knows every logical possibility. So every possible state of affairs that's logically consistent, God knows that. So he knows, among other things, every possible choice that a person might make. The second sense in which he is omniscient is he knows what everything that's actual. And so he knows every choice, not just that's possible for a person to make, he knows every choice that a person actually does make during the course of their life. And he knows that because he sees what they're doing. He's outside of time. He sees their entire life. He creates them. Bang, their entire life is there in front of him. He sees every choice they actually make. The question is, if he didn't create them, would God know the choices they would have made if he created them? Now, some theologians have said yes to this question. They call this mode of knowledge middle knowledge, because it's midway between his knowledge of the possible and his knowledge of the actual. It's what would have happened. So it's a little more than possible, but it's not actual either. So they call it middle knowledge. And many theologians have said, yeah, God has middle knowledge. And as a result of that, he knows what a person would have done if he had created them. And for people who say that, hell is a significant problem, because God, on this view, God created someone knowing not just that some people, but that this person would choose hell.
Right.
Why would he create them if this person is going to experience eternity away from God? Well, it seems that one answer here is it's still better for that person to exist rather than not. Existence is itself a great gift. And it's like, even, you know, in life, when you're frustrated, most people still prefer being alive, and even though it has some difficulties in it. And so in the case of damned souls, they might, you know, it, either objectively or even the damned soul might say, I'd rather exist than not, you know. So for people who think God has middle knowledge, this is one solution they could propose, that it's, whether the damned recognize it or not, it's still better for the damned to exist than to not exist. And so they're still coming out on the plus side if God creates them knowing that they're going to choose to reject him. But does God have middle knowledge? Historically, like at the time of Thomas Aquinas and so forth, this was not a recognized mode of divine knowledge. And so the church does not teach that God has knowledge of, the fancy term for them is free will counterfactuals. They're things that didn't happen, so they're counter to fact, but they're also based on free will. Put it in a little less formal jargon, these would be the free will choices that were never made.
Yes.
And the idea of knowing the outcome of a free choice that nobody ever made sounds kind of like square circle or four-sided triangle. It sounds like it might involve a logical contradiction.
Right.
And if the idea of the outcome of a free choice that never gets made is a logical contradiction, then God would not have knowledge of these choices. And so he wouldn't have the ability to say, if I create this person, they're going to go to hell. He would have the ability to say, I know what this person might do if I create them, and he would know if he creates them, here are all the things they actually do choose, but he wouldn't be able to, in one moment, know what they would have done and then stop himself from creating them.
I see. Yeah.
So additional possibility. By the way, Marcus, I'm working right now on a short book on the problem of evil that may be of assistance to you. It's not going to go into this particular question, but it does go into the problem of evil more generally. And also, I already have out a DVD on this, and it's called very creatively, The Problem of Evil. Maybe we could send that to Marcus.
Can we send Marcus The Problem of Evil, Jimmy Akin's? Yes, we can. Marcus, if you hang on the line, we'll get that out to you. We'll get an address from you and send it to you. If you don't hang on the line, I guess we could just guess at an address and send it there and hope that it gets to you, but I don't think that'll work.
You have such faith.
I know. Just open up the phone book. Oh, phone book. Are there still phone books? Did I just say something that doesn't exist anymore?
I don't know
anymore?
If there are.
Is this the pro-life group that just walked into the studio that you gave the talk to before?
Uh-huh. Yep. I recognize them.
They're scary looking. Was it scary to give a talk to them? That's a frightening looking.
No, they were nice.
Oh, they were?
They were very nice.
I'm only kidding. You're not scary looking. Relax in there. Yeah. All right.
He kids a lot.
888-3- they got the camera on him. 888-318-7884, the number here. If you're not a Catholic and you've got a question about the Catholic faith, you're welcome to call. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of, most recently, of The Bible is a Catholic Book, and the proprietor of a little podcast we like to call Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Daryl in Idaho is next. Daryl in Idaho, you got a question for Jimmy Akin?
Yeah, I do. I'm a Protestant considering converting over to the Catholic faith. And I've got a lot of Protestant churches I've been to, and they all are Catholic bashers. Mm. And I never seem to have the kind of argument answered that I need to support why I believe Catholicism is better than Protestantism. I know it's a big bunch of goo and pitcher that I can't explain with my finite mind, but maybe you can give me the short answer. How do I answer these questions? That Mary is worshipped, that the rosary is unessential to salvation,
okay,
and all the, keeping Christ on the cross and all the arguments that the Protestants use. What's the short answer for that?
Well, it sounds like you really are encountering some churches that are quite anti-Catholic. Most Protestant churches actually have kind of retired the arguments that you just made and don't use them anymore because they're not really that great. And as there's been dialogue between Protestants and Catholics, most Protestant churches have kind of backed away from some of those arguments because it's just not true that Catholics worship Mary. In modern English, in contemporary English, the word worship is used to refer to the kind of worship that is given only to God as the infinite creator of the universe. And Catholics just don't believe Mary is God. We recognize she's a finite creature. She's a very special finite creature, but Mary's not God. And so Catholics are not worshiping her. They may honor her. And Jesus said, honor your parents. And Paul said, give honor to everyone who is due honor. And certainly Jesus, if Jesus honored his own mother, we should too. But honor is not saying somebody is the infinite creator. And Catholics do not believe Mary is the infinite creator. Also, you mentioned the rosary not being essential to salvation. From a Catholic perspective, no duh. the Catholic Church does not claim the rosary is essential to salvation. The rosary is a devotion that is very special to many Catholics and that they would say helps them grow closer to God. But it's not even a universal in the Catholic Church. It's a Western devotion primarily, and it's not even used by all Eastern Catholics. The Church does not require that people say the rosary. It's a private devotion that they can do if they feel it will help them grow closer to God. The Church may even recommend it, but it doesn't require it, and it doesn't say that it's required for salvation. So it's simply a straw man of the Catholic position to say, well, the rosary is not essential for salvation. Well, we never claimed it was. There was a third issue that you mentioned, Daryl.
Jesus taking Jesus off the cross.
Oh, yeah. So, this is one of the... I'm trying to think of a polite way to say it. It's one of the more interesting charges that has sometimes been made. What this has to do with is artistic representations of Jesus on a cross versus a bare cross. And you will have, let me make sure I'm thinking of the right challenge in this case. So typically what will happen, at least in the challenge I'm thinking of, is historically some Protestants would say, well, Catholics shouldn't have crucifixes because Jesus is no longer on the cross. Well, when the cross was standing, Jesus was on it. The cross is not standing at all now. And so if you want to depict the way the cross is now, you would disassemble it. Yeah. You wouldn't use it as a symbol at all. But when it was standing, the thing that was significant about it was Jesus was on it. And so if you want to remember Jesus's crucifixion, the logical way to do it is not depicting a bare cross that was never standing without Jesus on it, because they nailed him to it, they put up the cross, then they take him down with the cross. The logical way to do it is to show Jesus doing the act of redemption for us. And in fact, most Protestants will recognize the legitimacy of depicting Jesus being on the cross. In fact, if you look at in Protestant picture Bibles, they're not going to have just a bare cross there. They're going to show you Jesus on it. This is just a three-dimensional representation instead of a two-dimensional representation. And if you really want to remember what Jesus did, you would include him there. Daryl, I want to mention, you've raised a number of different issues there. One resource I'd like to recommend to you is our website, catholic.com. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of answers to challenges like this there for free at catholic.com. So just go to catholic.com and type in whatever challenge you're dealing with at the moment from your anti-Catholic friends, and odds are we'll have an article or a Q&A or something that deals with it. Also, I wrote a book called A Daily Defense, which answers more than 300 challenges, many of which are ones that could be a benefit to you. So since you're looking at becoming Catholic, why don't we see if we can send Daryl A Daily Defense?
Daryl, in order for us to do that, you got to hang on the line while we go to this break. So just hold on and Marie will get your info and we'll send you a Daily Defense. And I'll always feel free to call back here as well. We'd love to continue the conversation with you. It's open forum for non-Catholics. Oh, before we go to the break, let me just remind you, we've got a brand new free ebook. It's called God's Love for You. And guess what it's about? It's about God's love for you. And it's free.
I wonder who wrote that.
Did you write it?
Yes, I wrote it.
Oh, we have a free ebook from Jimmy Akin. It doesn't even say that on my notes here.
Well, that's because it doesn't have my byline on it.
Oh, okay. It's called God's Love for You, and you can get it for free. That's what free means at shop.catholic.com. Shop.catholic.com. Just click on the banner and get your free ebook.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
I might have gone to church, you know, at Christmas time, gradually quit going. It's not as scary as I thought it was. It's a much more warm and open place, and God really is about love. It's not about the rules and the things that I remember as a young child. It really is about the love that God has for each one of us that's so deep and wonderful.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
A whole pro-life group from Cathedral Catholic High School in here. That was very, very nice to get to see all of them. And I'm glad that was nice. Jimmy, I'm glad you got to give them a pro-life talk.
Well, it wasn't a pro-life talk, but it was a talk.
Oh, okay.
They were pro-life. Of course, I'm pro-life too. It just wasn't a pro-life talk.
Oh, yeah.
I did answer some pro-life questions for them.
And they're maintaining their position? They're going to stay pro-life?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. They were very firm about that. They were more like, how do we defend this for people who aren't pro-life?
Bless them. God bless those kids for thinking that way. It's open forum for non-Catholics today. If you've got a question, you're welcome to call. But I want to go to Jamal in Texas because I think Jamal has been waiting a good long while. Jamal in Texas, you there with us? Hang on. Jamal, you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry to keep you waiting, Jamal. Your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yes, man, I'm a Eastern Orthodox, Greek Orthodox Christian, mm-hmm. and my fiance is Catholic. And the question I have, we both believe in the sacraments of marriage, and we're getting ready to get married, but she's more of a regular attendant. We feel more comfortable getting married in her church, mm-hmm. and want to kind of check and see if the sacrament would actually be valid with us being, me being Eastern Orthodox and her being Catholic, and would there be any hindrances to that? I'm fully observant, but I don't get to attend much because I'm a truck driver and I'm on the road a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so when I do come back home, one week we'll go with her, and the next time I come home we'll go to mine. But she's going all the time to her, so she just has more of a familiar base, you know, in her church than uh-huh. I do with mine.
Okay, so from a Catholic perspective, you're both baptized Christians, and so if you get married, you're going to be having the sacrament of matrimony between you. It'll be a sacramental marriage. In terms of what you need to do in order to get married, the way canon law is written on the Catholic side, you should either have a Catholic wedding, or she should get permission to have a non-Catholic wedding in your Orthodox church. Although that's required in order to be in compliance with the way the law is written. But actually, since you're Orthodox, it would actually still be valid even if that didn't happen. But what you should do is either get married in the Catholic church or get permission for a non-Catholic marriage, which is, you know, regularly granted in this kind of situation. After you're married, she does need to maintain her Catholic faith. She needs to go to Catholic church every week on Sundays or, you know, Saturday evening, even if she also goes with you to Orthodox church. So she does need to maintain her Catholic practice, and she should do what she can to see that the children are raised Catholic, but the marriage will be valid. And so that's a general sketch of it. And congratulations on the happy day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jamal. Up next is Chris in Bozeman, Montana. Chris, you there with us?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Hi.
How can the Pope and the Church infallibly declare that someone is in heaven as a saint? And mm-hmm. can you talk me through that one?
Okay. So I should mention that the idea that saint canonizations by the Pope, not other saint canonizations, but saint canonizations by the Pope are widely believed by Catholic theologians to be infallible. However, there is some question about that. You have had very Orthodox theologians like Cardinal Avery Dulles mm-hmm. who have questioned this. The answer comes down to the scope of the church's infallibility. And this is something I talk about in my book, Teaching with Authority, which is devoted to how church teaching works, including how infallibility works. The church can infallibly, and everybody agrees to this, the church can infallibly define things that were divinely revealed to us by Christ and the apostles. So all the Old Testament stuff, all the New Testament stuff, traditions that have been handed down from Christ and the apostles, all of that is subject to infallible definition. But what about somebody's death, living centuries afterwards? That has not, that's not part of public revelation. Someone dies in 1800.
Mm-hmm.
That's not some, the fact they died in a state of grace has not been passed down to us from Christ and the apostles. Now you could say, well, some Old Testament figures, their death in a state of grace is guaranteed by Hebrews 11. That's part of the deposit of faith, but not somebody who dies in 1800. So what evidence do we have regarding the idea that they died in a state of grace? And basically, we look at their life leading up to that, which is why the church does an investigation and says, were they living a life of heroic virtue before their death, which would provide some evidence that they died in a state of grace. Doesn't prove it, but it provides some evidence. You look at what happened to them before they died, and then you look at what happened after they died. Is God apparently granting miracles through this person's intercession? And if God is granting miracles through this person's intercession, that, or seems to be, that would count as evidence also that they died in a state of grace. And so the church looks at that and makes a judgment. It looks like this person died in a state of grace, and then the Pope does a canonization. Now, in addition to being able to define things that are part of the deposit of faith that Christ gave the apostles, the church also has the ability to define things that are necessary in order to defend things that are in the deposit of faith. For example, let's suppose a church council issues a ruling on something like the Council of Trent. It infallibly defines something. But then you have a group of people come along and say, we don't think Trent was a real council.
Yeah.
Well, it could be necessary for the church to define, yes, Trent was an ecumenical council,
yeah,
in order to protect whatever it was that Trent defined.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though Trent is an ecumenical council, that's not part of the deposit of faith, but defining that could be necessary to defend something that is in the deposit of faith. So the question becomes, is it necessary to be able to define the sanctity of someone at the moment of death in order to defend something that is in the deposit of faith? Many theologians historically have thought, yes, that by defining infallibly a saint's canonization, that protects various things in the deposit of faith, but not all theologians have said that. Some theologians have said, I think we can defend the deposit of faith without having to infallibly define that this person's death in 1800 was absolutely 100% guaranteed to be in sanctity.
Chris, I'm going to leave it there because a couple more calls to see if I can get to him. Ted in Tennessee, watching on Facebook Live. You are next. Ted, your question for Jimmy.
Hi, Jimmy, Cy. How are y'all doing this evening?
Very well, Ted. Thank you. We're short of time, though, so your question for Jimmy?
Okay, so my question is, my father has this prayer book, and it's from the original traditional Mass. And so my question is about plenary indulgences. Specifically, I have in the book here in front of me, it says, an indulgence of 300 days is granted every time this litany of the Blessed Mother is said,
mm-hmm.
A plenary indulgence on the feast of the Immaculate Conception, the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Annunciation, the Purification, and the Assumption is granted. So I was just wondering about that specific bit, and then maybe just a little bit of depth on plenary indulgences.
All right.
Okay. So you should be aware that the Church's discipline regarding indulgences has been revised. And anytime we touch this topic, I need to say a brief word about what indulgences are, because there's a popular idea that indulgences are like permission to sin.
Oh,
or something like that. They are not.
Okay.
Or that it's a forgiveness of sins, and it's not that either. In fact, what indulgences are is where the church uses the authority that God gave it to intervene to help a person deal with the consequences of a sin that has already been forgiven. So it presupposes you've already been forgiven. The church's regulations regarding 300 days and stuff, that's been eliminated now, those numbers. If you want more on plenary indulgences, since I can hear the music, check out, just Google online, Jimmy Akin, a primer on indulgences or a primer on indulgences, and you'll get a whole article that I wrote dealing with this in the biblical principles.
Ted, if you check that out and you still have questions, Jimmy will be here both hours Thursday for open forum, and we'll make sure we give you a follow-up question there. But check out Jimmy Akin's primer on indulgences, and then follow up Thursday if you need to. Tomorrow we have 2 hours of open forum. Trent Horn, Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin. I'm looking forward to seeing you several times this week. So thanks for joining us for this hour.
My pleasure.
Don't forget to check out Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.